You're listening to David Kaplan. Weekdays 9 to noon on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.
It's 11 o'clock in the great city of Chicago. Danny Zetterman and Chris Black. I'm David Kaplan. We are going to talk to Darnell Mayberry in the next couple of minutes. He was with the team in Sacramento. The Bulls got a much-needed victory, and they have to continue to stack some wins. They blew opportunities against lousy opponents early in the season. But last night, they got a better performance out of Lauri Markkanen, 28 from Zach LaVine. They battled some adversity during the game, and they got it done winning last night. We'll talk to Darnell about the state of the club in just a couple minutes. Hey, Chris Black, my college football go-to man.
David Kaplan, host of Cap and Company, 9 to noon on ESPN 1000.
How about this? Ohio State, in the recruiting classes of 2016, 17, 18, and 19, signed 69 four- or five-star recruits. 69 four- and five-star recruits. Michigan, who everyone goes, oh, they got better academic standards. The kids can't get into school. They signed 71 of the same type of recruits.
Yeah.
71. But of those recruits that Ohio State brought in, 18 were first and second round draft picks. Michigan, just four. As Paul Hembakidis, who covers it, says, Michigan's problem isn't recruiting. Player development is.
Yeah, and that's why Urban Meyer is one of the best coaches in all of college football. And even though he's on the Fox set this year, I mean, he clearly turned out players who not only were big recruits coming to Ohio State, but got them to the next level. And that's important, especially when you look at Clemson and Alabama. Part of the reason why they've been so great over the course of the last 5 years, and Alabama even longer, is because they've got pro players who are developing while they're on campus. You know who else has that problem that you just pointed out with Michigan? Is they get good recruits, but they're not getting them to develop while they're on campus? Texas. Texas has a good head coach. They have all the money in the world. They have the recruits, four- and five-star recruits.
Great facilities.
Great facilities. And when I say they have all the money in the world, they probably have the most, you know,
some
when,
people say Texas is the number one job in college football.
Right, exactly. And Texas struggling again this year, and it's because they are not developing the players on campus. So, yeah, it's a problem for Michigan. Jim Harbaugh needs to try and fix that going forward if he's going to compete with Ohio State.
Crazy. I saw that number, and I'm like, all right, I don't want to hear the Michigan people anymore. I ran into a guy at the health club yesterday. He's like, dude, we have academic standards at Michigan. Ohio State, get anybody into school.
Right.
You know what? Stick that. You can get any guy can breathe. You can get him into Michigan if he can play football. Come on. You're better than that. You just have a bad program right now if you want to talk about competing for national titles. You want to have a decent program? You got a decent program. You want to compete for national titles? Go be a Buckeye. 312-332-3776. By the way, did you guys see the quote from Nick Williams on ESPN Radio about Mitchell Trubisky? Bears D lineman says, we are all rallying behind Mitchell Trubisky. He's our guy. We know he can win it for us, and we have the ultimate trust in him. Like that.
Well, what's he going to say?
Yeah, and Prince Amukamara told me that 3 weeks ago.
You know what? Mitch isn't our guy. We think we're going to lose on Thursday if he's under center. I mean, really? Really? If our boss, Craig, came down and said, Danny, how's Cap's focus today? I would look him in the eye and say, Craig, Cap's focus has been on point. He's our host. I've never seen him more dialed in.
Danny, are you suggesting that Cap was just reading something off Twitter that he saw, even though he was supposed to be going to a Chicago Bulls interview?
100%.
With our next guest?
Yeah, I'm waiting for Danny to tell me Darnell's ready.
I've been standing here like this with my thumb up.
Yeah, no, you have not.
Chris, truth or not, I've been like this with my thumb up, meaning the guest is ready for like the last 3 minutes, but you've been zoned in, not paying attention, laser focused. But I would tell the bosses you are.
All right. We're moving. Wow. We're moving from those two lunatics in that room to Darnell Mayberry, who has been around the Bulls since the start of the season. He's been a fixture on the beat. He was in Sacramento when they won last night, and he joins us now. Darnell, good morning. How are you, buddy?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm doing well. Having to combat these two lunatics in the other room is a full-time job, but somebody's got to do it. So let's talk about where this team is. I know they beat a lousy Sacramento team last night. I know they need to stack some wins. I know they've gone through a part of their schedule where they had some games that they should have won. Charlotte, the Knicks, the Cavs. So take me inside where this team's mindset is right now.
I think the most telling thing that came out of the locker room last night after that Sacramento Kings win was a quote from Wendell Carter Jr. who said that it shows that guys are still together, that guys haven't given up, they haven't quit, they're still bought into the system and playing for each other. So it really looked like they weren't that, you know, just a couple nights ago, especially after that loss to the Warriors, the Thanksgiving Eve. So if those guys are still bought in and they are still playing for each other and are still playing for this coach, they can turn around their season and maybe get back to some respectability. But if they aren't and it's just lip service, then this thing could still go the other way.
So what do you think ends up happening if they don't stack some wins and if this team continues to play uninspired basketball at times like they did in the Golden State game that you referenced? Do they make a trade? Do they choose the coach over a guy like Zach LaVine? What is on the table, do you think?
I think the sense from most of the people who are around the team and are understand how this organization works is that there's going to be a trade made. You know, I think the players will probably get pointed to first, and maybe that's Zach LaVine, which is interesting because he's the only guy who, you know, you know what you're going to get every night, him and Wendell Carter Jr., really. But offensively, Zach LaVine's the only guy who's bringing it on most nights, and people can argue all day long whether or not it's impactful numbers or winning plays or if he's a winning player even. But he's going to get roll out of bed and get 20 points, and you can bank on that every night. And that, to me, there's something to be said for that when you got a guy who you know is going to bring it offensively every night. That's what Zach LaVine does. But, you know, just personally, I don't see how they can continue to support Jim Boylan if the record continues to get ugly, if they continue to lose games, frankly, that they shouldn't be losing to teams without their best players, like Brooklyn when they came into the United Center and won without Kyrie Irving and Caris LeVert, like Indiana when they were down three starters. And then the Golden State Warriors team when they were without Klay Thompson, Steph Curry, and D'Angelo Russell. So, you know, those losses shouldn't be happening. And when Jim Boylan comes out and says there's no shame in it, that just adds insult to injury.
Yeah, Will Perdue, I know you were on the road. I don't know if you saw the clip that NBC Sports Chicago posted, but Will Perdue said when that they were referencing Coach Boylan saying there's no shame in it, and Will said, no, there actually is shame in it. That's a team that you're more talented than. There is no excuse for what we watched tonight. Is Jim aware of the narrative that's being written that the Bulls have a disconnect between their players and their head coach?
I think he's aware of it. I think he is in a position right now where he just has to be positive. And when he gets in front of those microphones and those television cameras, you know, those lights come on, I think he's trying to put on the positivity and the good face for the franchise. He has to be the voice of the franchise every night, sometimes up to three times a day. So the last thing I think he wants to do is come out there and bash his players, bash the roster, which is essentially bashing his bosses for building this roster if he does that. So he has no choice, I think, in his mind than to come out there and try to put a positive spin on things so that he's not making things worse with negativity.
Yeah, what I am most baffled by is they've assembled a roster that has some nice players on it, no doubt about it. They don't have a point guard on that roster. And I'm amazed in a league that the point guard is playing a more and more influential role that they don't look at their team and go, yeah, we got to get a point guard. Do you think they finally realize that?
I mean, I think they realized it last year, and that's why we saw John Paxson come out and really rip into Chris Dunn so much the way that he did at the end of last season, basically telling the public that they want to go out there and upgrade at the position, and they tried. They went out and got Thomas Satoransky. They drafted Kobe White. You know, they spent a ton of assets to get those two guys, $10 million a year for Satoransky, the seventh overall pick for Kobe White. Neither of those guys are floor generals, and maybe they thought Thomas Satoransky was going to be more assertive, more consistently, but he hasn't been that. And maybe he's just not that, and maybe they missed in their evaluations. And Coby White, we know, is not a true point guard at this juncture in his career. He's more of a score-first guy. So they need to go out there and get a guy who can make plays for others and create and orchestrate the offense. But right now they don't have that, and it's really telling when you see so many guys struggle.
Can you explain to me why there was a point guard on the free agent market that fits exactly what we're talking about? He's not the best player in the league, but he's a really good player. And I don't believe the Bulls were ever involved whatsoever. And I'm talking about Ricky Rubio, who had 13 assists last night. He's averaging 8.2, fifth best in the league. His player efficiency rating is okay, but he gets to the glass for a guard, almost 5 rebounds. He's averaging over 13 points. Why would they not have had any interest there?
Well, they wanted someone who was going to come in and sort of fit the timeline a little bit better than Ricky Rubio. Ricky Rubio just turned 29 at the start of the season. You know, that's a little old for them, and maybe they wanted someone who was going to come in and be closer aligned to Zach LaVine and Lauri Markkanen and Otto Porter Jr. and Wendell Carter Jr. So I can understand it from that standpoint, but you bring up a good point that he's a guy who would have come in here and made everyone better. He would have been selfless. He would have been able to hold his own defensively, and he would have gotten everyone involved offensively and made everyone look a lot better than they are. That's the kind of guy that they need. I'm not saying Ricky Rubio is the guy, but that is the type of playmaker and floor general that this team clearly needs.
Yeah, and to back up what you're saying, Satoransky is 28 years of age, so you know, he just turned 28 at the end of October, so he's a year and a half younger. But it's not that big on the timeline. If they're going to make a trade, for me, if they're going to make a deal, and I can't believe they'll choose the coach over a high-level talent like Zach LaVine, but maybe they will. If they do, they've got to get a floor general back. Somebody they can hand the ball to 35 minutes a night and go, run the show, guy. Go get him.
You know the guy who I saw earlier this season who is exactly that is Malcolm Brogdon. Mm-hmm. Now, he got a boatload from the Pacers, but that game where the Bulls lost to a Pacers team without Victor Oladipo, without Miles Turner, without Domantas Sabonis, it's three of their starters, three of their four best players. I would throw Brogdon in there as one of the four. But he went out there and controlled the game and ran that team and made sure that there was no substantial drop-off between not having those guys and going out there and taking the floor and competing without them. And that's the type of guy that the Bulls needed. I was in love with the idea of getting Patrick Beverley because I thought he could change the entire culture and raise everyone's level of play. He's not, the most talented, but I think just from a competitive standpoint, he would have raised everyone's level of play. But Malcolm Brogdon, I think, would have been money well spent if they would have been able to get him.
Yeah, I completely agree with you on the Pat Beverley deal fixing the culture because he holds everybody accountable. Now, did he get overpaid for his skill set? Probably, but guess what? Welcome to the NBA. Everybody gets overpaid for their skill set. Malcolm Brogdon would have been a wonderful addition. I know there was some trepidation from teams because he's had a foot injury that might be uninsurable from some guys in the league that I talked to. But at some point, they've got to get this thing fixed. So for people that aren't privy to being around the team every day like you are, is it a group where you go, you know what, they actually are buying into Jim and it's a pretty good mix there, or boy, this thing's a powder keg and it might explode?
I think it's closer to the latter.
Wow.
Because the results just aren't where they want them to be, where they expected them to be. I mean, again, go back to the games that they're losing, the way that they're losing. We haven't even talked about the blown leads that they've had this season. Big leads that they've squandered late in games. And things like that just keep happening. The defensive rotations are all whacked. Out of whack. Offensively, you're not seeing a lot of players in sync and finding, Lauri Markkanen keeps talking about finding his spots, and he doesn't want to be just a three-point shooter, but that's kind of what he's been throughout the first 21 games of this season. So I think there's a lot of frustration, and guys just aren't really holding each other accountable from a player standpoint, and that's a problem. The coaches want a player coach team, and they're not getting that just yet. So there's just a lot of issues right now, and that win in Sacramento last night was the best thing that could have happened for these guys because they desperately needed it.
Hey, man, thank you for the knowledge and for the time. As we let you go, Pax, Gar, I know John's been on the trip. Is that a two-headed monster still in terms of evaluating players, making deals, determining who the coach is, or is it John is in charge and Gar's out scouting?
I think it's more of John is in charge, but I do think that they have a real trust in Gar Forman's abilities. They like some of the things that he brings in terms of scouting and negotiations, things like that. So I don't think that he's on the outs, but you are seeing a lot less of him. I haven't seen him on this trip, you know, this three-game trip that started in San Francisco, went through Portland, and now Sacramento last night. I never saw Gar Forman, but I did see John Paxson. So it's clear that he's not as front and center as he used to be. But, you know, time will tell, and I think John Paxson is going to get ready to speak up soon, and maybe we can get some more answers to that.
Hey, if you had to make a bet, is Jim Boylan the head coach of the Bulls opening day next year?
I think so. I really do. I don't think that they can pull the plug on him after giving him that extension this summer. I think they give him all of this year for sure. And then if things get rocky to start next year, then I'd be kind of looking at that Christmas, around that Christmas mark to see what they're going to do then. But things have to really get rocky, I think, at the start of next year in the fourth year of the rebuild.
Hey, man, appreciate the knowledge. Keep up the great work, as always.
All right, thank you.
See you, bud. There you go, Darnell Mayberry, who covers the Chicago Bulls. Chris, anything there surprise you that he felt like it was closer to the ladder that this thing could come apart at the seams if they don't start winning basketball games?
No, it doesn't surprise me at all, because look at how bad they've played. And Darnell laid it out. Look at the losses that they've had in the fourth quarters, giving up leads.
Charlotte.
And the fact that
Indiana, Cleveland, New York. I mean, teams you got to beat.
And Cap, I know you've pointed to offensive stats and how buckets are there for this team, but many times late in games, it's a bunch of standing around on offense. That's not an efficient way to play basketball, and it's not a way to put your guys into position. So I don't think they trust the coach. I don't think the fan base should trust the coach either. I don't think he's proven anything. In fact, I think he's proven to us that he's not a very good coach in the NBA, where other guys are scheming and getting guys open on every opportunity late in games. So, you know, to see it all collapse, if they don't – like, if you look at their schedule coming up and they won against the Kings last night – they can go 5 of 7 realistically here in the next little stretch run. And that would put them right back into the playoff conversation that we thought they would be in at the start of the season. If they don't do that, yeah, it could go towards the ladder of what you guys are talking about. Absolutely.
Wow. That's all we need is another thing we've got to talk about with another controversy. You got the Blackhawks, you got controversy going on all over the place there with the assistant coach now being investigated, and you got Brent Seabrook makes comments a few weeks ago, there's no communication, and now the team's just getting their head kicked in. It's like everything's a train wreck. I haven't seen Chicago sports in this way in a long, long time. 312-332-3776. The great, powerful Tom Waddle joins us next.
ESPN 1000 Pros in the Know. Mike Yurko.
Dallas can run the ball. They can throw the ball. They've got 3 or 4 receivers that can catch the ball. But for one reason or another, they find ways to lose. They've got injuries on the defensive side of the ball. The Bears might be able to take advantage of it.
Yurko talks Bears and Cowboys. Noon to 2 on Carmen and Yurko.
Keep your playoff hopes alive. That's all you want.
On ESPN 1000. You're listening to David Kaplan, weekdays 9 to noon on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.
11:26 in the great city of Chicago. With the great Tom Waddle, I'm David Kaplan, 312-332-3776.
Hey now.
Hi Tom, how are you, buddy?
I'm doing well, how are you?
I am.
If you guys find gentlemen talking to me behind the glass, I won't hear you because I don't have a headset. Just letting you know.
We'll just yell in here.
Cool. That's how we do it in the afternoons.
That's
crude,
it.
But effective.
So the Chicago Bears got
don't
some help last
you.
Night.
Don't let me hear you.
What? Chicago Bears got some help last night. Seattle Seahawks dispatched the Vikings.
Yeah, they did, but I mean, like, everyone's... Wasn't that almost kind of a given? Didn't everyone fully... I know there are no certainties in the NFL, because it is, as I like to say, a fickle beast to the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
But wasn't one of the more sure plays of the two, or the Week 13 schedule, the Seahawks at home over the Vikings? Like, well, you're not shocked, are you?
No, I had Seattle, but the hot play in Vegas was the Vikings.
Were they really?
Three. Yeah.
Wow.
The line moved down to under 3. Yeah. All the money was coming in on the Vikes.
That's strange.
Yeah.
It's one of the few games I picked correctly this week. But yeah, I mean, I look more at the Vikings. You need them to stumble at one or two times in the next couple of weeks against Detroit, and then I believe they've got San Diego. I mean, that's what it's going to come down to.
San Diego got a team back?
I mean, Los Angeles. I still say San Diego. So, I mean, it kind of was expected, but yes, there's a crack. The crack in the door there. Now you got to kick it down, and you got to find a way.
Find a way. So I watched the game last night, and I found it interesting that when the game was still close, the Seahawks were running the ball more than they were throwing the ball.
Yeah.
And because they are missing their tight end, they went to 6 offensive linemen.
Yeah.
And just...
We call that good coaching.
Really good coaching.
Yeah, you see that in Baltimore now with what they've done with Lamar Jackson. You see that in San Francisco in terms of a game plan. So, look, and maybe surprising to some, the Vikings struggled to stop the run. I believe they gave up over 200 yards rushing. So the narrative's going to be, as it's been all day, that, look, Kirk Cousins is now 0-8 on Monday Night Football, and their final drive was nothing to be excited about. But when you are a defensive-minded team and you give up 200 yards rushing, there's a pretty good chance you're going to lose that game.
Yep, no question about it. So what do you think happens on Thursday?
Look, this is a game that there's no question the Bears can win. Will they win? I'm still in, you know, prove it mode. You know, like I think this Cowboys team is a total mystery, because there is so much talent there. Look, statistically, and you can make stats sing whatever song you want, as I like to say, they're number one in the league in yards per game. They average 433 yards at 26 points per game. They've got difference makers throughout their offensive huddle. They've got arguably the best offensive line. They've got the highest paid running back. They've got a game-changing receiver in Amari Cooper. And they've got one of the better young quarterbacks in the league. And then you look at their defense, and they're pretty impressive, too. I mean, they're not as good as the Bears, but they're 8th in points allowed, 8th in yards allowed, and they've got 2 dynamic pass rushers. So you ask yourself, how the hell is this team 6-6? Well, I think they've made mistakes in crucial moments. Sometimes that's a sign that they're not a very well-coached team, or there's some coaching decisions. The competition's been stiff recently. They've lost 2 in a row, and 3 of their last 4 losses are to the Vikings, the Patriots, and the Bills, and those teams are 27-9 collectively. So they've had to scale a pretty, you know, challenging mountain recently. But if you look at them top to bottom, I just think they're a better team right now than the Bears. So, yes, I believe the Bears can beat this team. I still need to see them beat a team not named the Lions or the Giants before I allow myself to dive into this. They can maybe run the team mentality or run the gamut mentality. So I actually picked the Cowboys in a close game. I think I picked the Cowboys 20-17.
But again, I wouldn't be shocked. They have not won a game this year where they haven't scored 30 points.
Well, that's, I know, and the Bears have beaten Daniel Jones, David Blau, Jeff Driskel, Case Keenum, Kirk Cousins, and Joe Flacco. Add up the records of all those teams.
Not good.
So, I mean, this is my point, is I'm not trying to argue against the Bears. I'm just saying for every yeah, but with the Cowboys, there's at least one yeah, buts with the Bears as well. So, listen, could they win? Absolutely. And if they do win, then, you know, the narrative becomes even more encouraging, because while the competition remains stiff, I think there's a good chance that, you know, this will be the easiest of their last 4 games. But if you do get Akeem Hicks back healthy or healthy enough to play significant time against Green Bay, that changes the entire defensive narrative. Because I think this Bears defense is really good, but they're not an elite defense.
They are when he plays.
He makes them more of an elite defense, and he just adds something that is tremendously valuable. So if they can get past the Cowboys, get Akeem back healthy enough to be a legitimate contributor, and the elbow is in good enough shape, now you've got something that allows you to be a little more or significantly more encouraged or optimistic. But it's still a difficult road. Look, the Green Bay Packers are still in a fight to win the division. You know, they haven't sealed it yet, but they're an imperfect team. The Kansas City Chiefs have gotten some of their defensive guys back, and they're still fighting for, you know, placement and seeding in the AFC. And the Vikings may be, you know, you may be playing the Vikings if things go your way and they go south for them to get in. So, you know, this is still a challenge for them. But, you know, you want to have something available to attain at this point in the season. And statistically, they're there. So, you know, while it is a tremendous long shot, they still have an opportunity. More importantly to me, honestly, this is why I was not a fan a couple of weeks ago when everyone said Mitch needs a mental break. He needs to get away from sit and let somebody else play, let him collect himself. He doesn't have any confidence. No, what you need to do from that point a couple of weeks ago to the end of this season,
make some plays.
Well, and you need to evaluate him, and you need to see him respond to the adversity that he's created
for
himself.
I thought he was really good on Thanksgiving.
He was. I thought he was very good as well. But listen, this is a position, quarterback and cornerback, where you have to have a short memory and thick skin. So my hope is he still has these wonderful thoughts of what happened on Thanksgiving, and he's not going back the week before against the Giants, where he threw two picks and they scored 19 points against a Giants defense that was giving up 32 a game in the prior six games, or where he got pulled from the game against the Rams. So, I mean, you want him to be staying in the moment right now as opposed to looking further back. So, but, you know, this is an opportunity. This is a golden opportunity for Mitch to change the narrative over the next 4 weeks to assure himself of the spot of being the guy that they're going to lean on going forward, and an opportunity to say, hey, like you like to say, take that to all of the doubters. Now, whether or not that takes place, there's skepticism for good reason, but he's got a great opportunity, and so do the Bears over the next four games starting Thursday to change the narrative.
If he goes out and plays really well the next 4 weeks, boy, oh boy, does that change the narrative. Oh,
well, not only does
God.
It change the narrative, but, I mean, you have to listen, is he playing really well, or is, like some people are saying, was he playing well for Mitch? Like, I mean, you need to play at a
higher level. I don't care who that
level.
Was. When, last Thursday, he was really good.
He was, but I'm saying, like, if he plays like that the next 4 weeks, now you have an entirely different conversation. There's no doubt. I mean, look around the league. If you could find someone that would play that way, like led them on an opening drive touchdown, led them back from 10-point deficit.
And a 90-yard drive at the end.
Now, again, it wasn't a perfect performance. There's no question about it. But there was significantly more good than bad. And yeah, if you can get that type of performance consistently, you've got an entirely different conversation. You can win pretty much anything with that. Coming into this season, I kept saying, listen, I just want them to be average on offense. They were 21st in the league last year. And you know what average on offense this year is? Like 360 yards and 23 points per game. Approximately, that's 16th in the league on the offensive plan.
They haven't come
if
close.
They're but if they're 350 yards and 23 points a game offensively, that's a Super Bowl cat with the defense that they have. I mean, you can be an NFC finalist and you can get to the Super Bowl with those types of performances. But still, even after the game in Detroit, they find themselves in the bottom four or five of the league in most statistical categories. I mean, even what did we see the other night? The Bears lead the league in punts. Like, this is why I say, when I look at this Bears and Cowboys game, can the Bears win? Yeah, of course. But the Cowboys lead the league with 433 yards per game. The Bears lead the league in punts. The Cowboys gain 433 yards per game. The Bears lead the league in punts. So, I mean, if I'm trying to be an impartial analyst and give you a prediction on what's... Listen, do the Cowboys get the edge on defense? No, the Bears get the edge on defense, but the Cowboys are eighth, the Bears are third, right? On offense, it's like the Cowboys are first, the Bears are 30th. So statistics, again, don't mean everything, but the eye test tells you right now the Cowboys... Yeah, and listen, I think if the Cowboys come in here and play a sloppy game and the Bears beat them, that thing could come apart at the seams. I think this is the most important game of the year by far for the Cowboys, despite the fact they have a one-game lead over the Eagles, and they play the Eagles, I believe, in the final week of the season. I think this game sets the tone for them going forward. Do they have the intestinal fortitude and the mental toughness to come in here and play a clean game and take advantage of all the talent they have on their roster? That I don't know. But if you told me I got to go to Vegas and I got to put money on the money line, who's going to win this game? I got to ride with the team that's got more difference makers. And that right now is the Dallas Cowboys.
All right. Before
I wouldn't put a lot of money on it, that's for sure.
Before I let you go, what was your thought on the Cubs saying goodbye to Addison Russell?
Well, I thought that was the obvious conclusion. I mean, look, it's...
Would you have let him go last year?
I didn't have a problem with what they did last year.
I respected that they wanted to save a young man. I would not have brought him back.
Yeah, no, I had no problem with what they did, and I trusted the organization from the standpoint that they had the right people making the right decisions. And every time Theo came on, he said, listen, we're listening to the experts. They're leading us. They're telling us how to handle this situation. It's not us. We're not social workers. This isn't our area of expertise. So we're following the advice of the professionals. And that's what they did. I mean, Addison Russell right now is not a $5 million a year player. In my opinion,
no chance.
So, I mean, if you factor in the off the field stuff, and it's, you know, it seals the deal. But I'm not surprised at all that they
decided
to go the other.
They offered a 5-year extension to him after 2016. He said no. And
well, I don't think Addison Russell probably ever in his wildest dreams thought that things would go sideways in this manner, whether it be in his personal life or in his baseball life.
But just, you look back...
I mean,
back,
people were calling Addison Russell the second coming of Barry Larkin in this town.
Correct. And well, that was said by
A's.
Billy B.
Yeah, I know. And it was a narrative that a lot of people that follow the Cubs were...
more than too happy to embrace. They embraced that.
Yeah, I mean, it just... before you're labeled great, you have to have a resume that has some sort of duration attached to it. He was fantastic in the 2016 season in the playoffs. But you can't be great in 1 year. You know what I'm saying? It's got to be over the course of 2 or 3 years.
Runs. He was a really good shortstop.
Smooth fielding
20
shortstop.
Home runs, 21 home runs. And now look where he's at.
Listen, sports, especially at the highest level, is about adjustments. What adjustments do you make in response to the adjustments that people are making to you? It's like, you know, I'm no baseball expert. What happened to the Cubs? What was it in 2017? They gave them a heavy dose of high fastballs. No one could hit it. The Cubs could not adjust to how they were being pitched. You know, so that's something. The teams, the players that adjust quickly and make those types of, you know, changes, those are the ones that end up having the long storied careers.
So, this show will be live from the winter meetings all next week.
Nice.
Looking forward
to that.
Where are they
at?
San Diego.
That doesn't suck.
That does not suck. So Danny,
you're taking Danny with you, aren't you?
Danny and I are going on
Sunday. Wow, that's like, you guys are like cats and dogs fighting the whole time out there, aren't you?
We take
separate
flights.
Will you guys stay in the same room?
No. He won't even know where I'm staying. He will not. He'll see me.
Dan Filato?
Are you guys not staying in the same hotel?
No, I will not tell him where I'm staying.
Why?
I take a separate phone that he doesn't know the number to. We show up. We do the show.
That's weird.
Tommy, we're at the same hotel. Okay. I got him his rate.
Oh, okay.
I love how he's, I got him his rate. Look at me. I got him a rate.
You know what he's been? You know how focused he's been today? He's on there Googling, how do you get TSA pre?
You don't have TSA pre-check?
No, I don't.
Oh, you got to get through that.
I'm doing.
Yeah, you have to. Two leave the city, one comes back. I'm going to be surprised if you guys come back friends or at least alive, both of you.
Yeah, I have clear.
Yeah, we'll be alive.
Well, I know, but one of you may assault or murder the other.
I told Chris, the second the show ends, he's not going to find me again.
Wow. Does that mean your body?
No. And then I'll see him again in the morning.
Do you know what clear is?
Yes.
I have that. It's the grid.
Yeah, that's what Barry Bonds was using, right?
No.
Oh.
I thought that was what Bonds was using.
No.
The clear.
The cream and the clear.
Yeah. No, I know. It's just like a fast pass through security.
Correct. And you walk up and they just look at the iris of your eye or your fingerprints. They go, go ahead. You don't even need your ID.
It's crazy.
Crazy.
Listen, this is real quick. This is a story. When I was a freshman in college, this is to tell you how things have changed. Freshman in college, we go on spring break to the Bahamas, okay? We get to the Bahamas. I hung out with all of, you know, all my roommates were different positions. But
it was a bunch of guys, not your family.
No. It was my freshman year in college.
Uh-huh.
So we had a tendency to have a good time. We get there, like, late afternoon or early evening. It's starting to get dark out. We get all our stuff. We... We don't even take our stuff and put them up in the rooms. We run to the beach. My buddies pick me up, throw me in the ocean. My passport, my return ticket are both in my pocket. It goes out to sea. So, I mean, like, I did, obviously, I got back. But think about that. What would have had to been 1985, maybe 86?
How's that possible if you were on the 85 Bears?
That's a funny
statement. That's a great question,
Danny. But my point to you is can you imagine, like, now?
You'd be.
Oh, you'd never get back.
It's crazy.
You'd never get back.
It just picked me up and just tossed me into the ocean.
Who was it, Romanowski?
No, it was a different crew.
Mark Camphouse?
No, he wasn't on that trip.
Doug Flutie?
The Beast was. My buddy, my college buddy, Jim Beastie.
Who's now his brother-in-law.
Yeah. Was. They're not married anymore.
Oh, sorry.
That's okay.
I didn't know
that. It happens. 50% of marriages end in divorce in this country.
So. Hey, you're preaching to the choir.
I don't need to tell you.
I read an article once on a flight. It said you should take your passport, Xerox it.
Yes, to have a copy.
And put it in your backpack. So right. I have that with me at all times.
Yes. It's a very smart thing to do.
There you go.
So,
and you got to get that new driver's license.
That's right. By October or something of next year.
October of 2020. Yeah. I went
because
to get
I don't
it
like to travel with my passport.
The line was 2.5 hours long.
Yeah, no thanks. Got to have a guy. Cap's got a guy.
There's no guys at the DMV.
Cap's got a guy at the Deerfield DMV, dude. Yes. Don't you?
No.
Yes, you do.
You? Yeah. Because right, that's where I got to go for my TSA.
He definitely does. He's got a guy at the DMV. I got a guy at O'Hare that, you know.
I got a guy at O'Hare at the TSA.
John? Do you have John? There's little John and big John.
I got Al.
Cap, get me a guy at the DMV at Deerfield and we can hang out in San Diego.
Yeah, I'm not hanging with you. Anyway, we've got to take a time out. We'll come back. We will have Carmen and Yurko in for Crosstalk. It's all coming up next.
Carmen and Yurko.
Bears football in just 2 days. They got the Thursday Nighter coming up.
They got Trubisky.
We got Miller.
Robinson.
We've got players making plays.
Let's get it done.
Kyle Brandt at 12:30, plus last night's Bulls and Hawks game. See you at noon for Crosstalk on ESPN 1000.
All right, boys. Welcome back. ESPN 1000. So the NFL... has the NFL 100 all-time team. And we've got some Bears players that'll be on there. Walter Payton, obviously, is going to be on there. And Bill Polian, who's been on this show many, many times, is on the Blue Ribbon panel, which voted to determine the team. Bill's a Hall of Famer and a great executive, and he joins us now. Hey, Bill, good morning. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing fine. Thank you. Happy holidays to you and all your listeners.
You too as well. So let's talk about this all-time NFL team. No surprise that Walter Payton is on there. Has there been any surprises or was the process difficult for you as you went through it? Because there's been so many great athletes.
Well, there are. The process was a little difficult because our obligation was to make sure that we honored the players of the past, not just the guys that are household names today and in the recent past. So they formed sort of a subcommittee, an ad hoc subcommittee, which consisted of Bill Belichick, Ron Wolf, Joel Bussard from the league office, John Madden, and myself, and Chris Willis from NFL Films, who was able to supply us with real old-time film footage. I mean, the Monsters of the Midway in the 30s and the Green Bay Packers in the 20s. And each of us looked at film, and we got an education, certainly, in how the game was played in those days, which is very different, 180 degrees different from the way it's played today, but also got an opportunity to, as football people, look at some of the old-time players on film and see who was appropriately suited to be honored in this way. And so, you know, among the running backs, obviously Walter's there, Barry Sanders, Gale Sayers, you know, the names that everybody knows. But the one that a lot of people don't is Steve Van Buren, who was the leading ground gainer in the league just after World War II. And was the bellwether behind the great Philadelphia Eagles team. So that's what we did at each position. And I'm anxious as anyone else to see what the final results are, because the final results were not shared with us. So that was tabulated by the league. So I'm as excited as anyone when the names come out.
The NFL 100 All-Time Team Series continues Friday at 7 p.m. Central on NFL Network, revealing the defensive backs, the safeties, the specialists who made the team. Then the NFL 100 All-Time Team Reaction Show Friday at 8 Central on NFL Network. And the D-back safety and specialist finalists will be announced later tonight. And then again, Fridays when you'll find out who the winners are. Before we go back to that for a minute, I got to ask you about the Bears. They have had an up-and-down season. They're scratching, clawing. They're 6-6, and they now have Dallas coming in here on Thursday evening. What have you thought about how Mitchell Trubisky has played? He's been better the last couple weeks.
Yeah, he has been better the last couple weeks. Prior to that, I thought he really regressed. But he's gotten better these past 2 weeks, and now as I've told you many times when I've been fortunate enough to be a guest on the show, this now is the dash for cash. Once we pass Thanksgiving Day, now comes the stretch run, and this is where the games count more than at any time during the year. So if he can keep that up and the defense can continue to find its footing, anytime you change coordinators, there's always a learning curve. You know, I've been through this twice in my career where you change a coordinator out, usually because he's promoted, who's been a top-flight guy and who has intimate knowledge of his system. You bring another coordinator in, and the new fellow says, I'm not making any changes. We'll tweak a little here or there, but this is still the same defense. In reality, it's a different voice and in some cases a different approach, and so you have to find your footing. It's not a new system, but it's a system that requires some adaptation. And so I think they've gotten there. And so if Mitchell continues to play well and value the ball and not make, unwise throws, and the defense continues to find its footing, then the Bears are in the hunt. Nothing's guaranteed at this point, as we saw last week, a number of upsets and also down the stretch here, the most important thing is health. The key people have to be healthy. If you sustain serious losses as you go through the last four games, it's pretty tough to make headway.
As you look at Mitchell Trubisky, and you know, Ryan Pace doesn't deal with the media during the year. He'll speak at the end of the year and then around the draft and then at training camp. But there's been a lot. The Bears got to go get whoever the guy is. Cam Newton, Nick Foles, this guy, that guy. Would you stick with Mitchell Trubisky going into 2020 as your number one guy?
I think the next four games and maybe beyond will tell you that. That's probably the answer. If he continues to improve as he has the past couple of weeks, then the answer is yes, because the arrow is up and you obviously still have control. And for all the reasons we've talked about 100 times, you know, he's a young player, only 13 games in college. He's just learning at this stage of the game. So if he continues to improve or even stays at the level at which he's played the last two games, then I would say the answer is probably yes. If he doesn't, then it's a hard decision.
Again, the NFL 100 All-Time Team Series, they will announce the defensive backs, the safeties, the specialists who made the team at 7 p.m. Central Friday on NFL Network, then the reaction show right after at 8, and they will announce the finalists for those positions tonight. If I asked you to name the single best player, Bill Polian has the number one pick in the draft. He can have any guy who ever played to start his franchise. Who's he taking?
Holy mackerel.
Tough question.
It really is a tough question. I'm gonna pass on the offensive side, because how do you decide among the quarterbacks?
You're the guy that came on my show several years ago, and Peyton was still playing for you. I was at a different station, and you said to me, let me tell you something. If you offered me 10 number one picks, I wouldn't take it, because that's how important he is to my franchise.
Oh, there's no question about that. There's no question about that. But there are other guys that fill that bill as well. One's still playing up there in New England. Yep. So I'll stay away from the quarterbacks. I think I would probably, I'll say this. I never gave this a thought during the process. So it's a question that's kind of stumped me. But I would go after quarterback. I would then go for a defensive lineman. And my gut reaction tells me that the choice would be between Bruce Smith, Mean Joe Green, and Merlin Olsen.
Wow. Pretty amazing players, man. I can't wait to watch the show Friday at 7 p.m. Central on NFL Network as they continue revealing the NFL 100 all-time team. Bill, thanks for taking a few minutes for us. You're the best.
Hey, my pleasure. Thank you. Again, happy holidays.
You too. There you go, Bill Polian, Hall of Fame executive.